You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and this week I am excited to interview pastor and superintendent of the North Dakota Ministry Network of the Assemblies of God. He has spent years kind of in small town, got to live through an oil boom and see what happens when a small town grows, talk about church planting. I'm just excited at the wealth of ministry experience and practical insight he brings to the table. But Pastor Sheldon McGorman is who we're interviewing today. And I want to say, Pastor Sheldon, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for the opportunity to come and share. I've been really excited. I've been listening actually to you guys for a while, and I'm really excited to be a part of this.
Well, good. I love that. I think you're definitely familiar with kind of the heart behind this. And it is true. I love every new story that I get to learn. And yours is no different. I have really enjoyed getting to know kind of the ministry you've done. But I want our listeners to enjoy that as well. And so we're going to start this episode like we start a lot of episodes and just kind of ask you for your story. You know, could you take that 5-minute flyover and say, you know, whether it's, hey, I got saved at a young age, or here's when I stepped into ministry, but like, give us the then to the now, the stops in between, kind of connect us to the rural church through your ministry and life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I grew up in not a rural church, actually. I grew up in a larger community. Grew up in Brandon, Manitoba, Canada, and went to a high school of 2,000 kids. It was a big community, big town, and so I really did grow up in the church, though. I loved Jesus with all my heart. Did spend a time far away from the Lord as a teenager. But then God got a hold of my life at camp one summer. And so the trajectory of my life changed. I felt like God called me to full-time ministry. I ended up going to Trinity Bible College in Ellendale, North Dakota, and found my wife there. She's a Montana girl. Rural Montana girl from Glasgow, Montana.
Yeah, I am familiar. It's a cold, cold northern place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
for sure.
So it was a warm up from Canada, but we were in good shape. We ended up graduating from Trinity. Went to a rural community in Watford City, North Dakota, the year 2000, and so that's where we ended up. We came to a community. It was about 1,200 people. It had been through some real ups and downs through oil and those type of things.
Sure.
Two houses on every street for sale, kind of a drying up main street. And so, but we walked into that, believed that God had called us, and we were excited about what God had in store for the next 25 years. So
yeah.
We ended up being planted deep in that community, ended up youth pastoring for 5 years. Served at the church and traveled and preached for a couple of years. Then ended up, through an odd set of circumstances, ended up being the senior pastor, lead pastor for 17 years after that. And then just recently, this last spring, was voted as superintendent of the North Dakota Ministry Network. So that's my kind of overarching timeline.
Yeah. And just to set the scene for some of our later questions, just because I think it would help listeners kind of understand our conversation, you know. So North Dakota is, like a lot of small towns, this resource-dependent kind of place. You know, you have this extraction from the land, and so oil industry is really big there. But tell us about the Watford you moved into, and tell us about the Watford city that you left. You know what I'm saying? Like, give us maybe a snapshot of like, well, this is where the church was at, this is where the town was at, and then just so people have an understanding of our conversation, like when you left Watford and left it in the hands of your associate, like how many campuses are we talking? What's the attendance difference? What's the town like these days? You know, just kind of give us that snapshot.
Yeah. You know, when we came to Watford City, it was pretty amazing because they probably at that moment as an Assembly of God church probably had about 10% of the population coming to the church. So
nice.
Those like 1,200 people, they would probably, you know, a real high Sunday, maybe 120 people, something like that, but average about 100 people, enough to take a chance and hire a youth pastor type person,
sure,
And so
Well, I mean, the trick with hiring youth pastors, you don't have to pay them, I've heard, actually. It's kind of wild. So, you know.
you could live off of love for a while. So it was really good. We had a good time getting going. God provided in really powerful ways. And then 25 years later, man, we went through an incredible oil boom in our community. We saw our population go from 1,200 somewhere over 10,000, settle out somewhere in the 7,000 range, something to that effect. But we saw some incredible growth, incredible life transformation during that season. The church now, we were able to plant multiple rural campuses. We planted three rural campuses, one kind of to the north, one to the east, or excuse me, one to the west, and then one to the south, all within kind of a radius, as well as a Hispanic congregation within our church as well, which is doing fantastic today. So we saw our church go from about 100, 120 people to well over 600 in our regular attendance at our campus. And then along with our campuses, those could run somewhere between a couple hundred by the time all of them were added up as well. So it's a pretty sizable congregation and just seeing great impact for the kingdom of God.
Absolutely. And again, it is truly hard to describe. It's so funny because the rural narrative is frequently one of decline, kind of what you experience when you move there. Well, here's this small town and the main street's shuttering and all these things. But one of the reasons that I'm excited to have this conversation is because something very exciting is happening. If you read a lot of the research, if you see obviously what COVID and even post-COVID and kind of political unrest, a lot of what it has created is called the rural remigration. What we're seeing is a lot of people who preferred like metropolitan or urban settings actually kind of seek this different life, kind of the escape from the race. And so there are people moving in significant numbers towards small towns, which makes me excited because the Bakken oil boom that happened in North Dakota really did transform the landscape permanently. And what I'm excited for is it feels to me like there are rural churches poised for the same kind of growth, which I think makes our conversation today even much more timely. And so I'm excited to dive into this because again, to walk into that situation, to walk out with a completely different church, and really a completely different makeup of your town, brings with it its own blessings, its own challenges. And of course, like any good story is, we're going to try and find a lot of those lessons through the hard times. And so let's start here. Obviously, we have this growth, this change. And if there's one thing that you and I probably know about rural towns is that change is hard. It's a different pace. Change often has a longer uphill climb to kind of come to fruition. But you found yourself in a town that was changing around you. And so let's talk first about like what challenges does a rural church as a whole face when there's a growing town? And then from there, we'll talk about how to minister to the population. But I want to start with just, you know, what do we notice right away when the town starts growing and the church is, you know, it's poised, but there's a lot of struggle there. So highlight that for us.
I think just to be pretty transparent, as we walked into the growth of Watford City, when new people started rolling in, and let's be honest, some challenging people at
Yeah,
times,
that's true.
but they're all great that moved in. You know, there was a lot of challenging, a lot of rough characters that were coming in. But you know, it was a really incredible opportunity. Many people were coming to save houses, to save businesses, to restart families. They were in desperate situations. They were leaving their whole family structure and their networks behind to try and save something, not sure if they could actually do it. And man, it was so amazing to watch how we were able to become those people's networks, to become those people's connection points, and even real family feels within our congregation, although our congregation was growing rapidly. Now, it didn't, obviously, it was challenging. It felt like we were drowning a large portion of the time while all of this was happening. But man, to just it was really challenging though, because like you said, change can be challenging, can be difficult in these moments. And I think that was one thing that we tried early on and were successful, is really encouraging our congregation to embrace a culture of change. And even though it wasn't that easy, our environment forced us to really embrace that. And so there were many churches in town that they discarded or didn't want anything to do with many of the people that were moving in. They said, "Hey, we like the old Watford City. Let's keep it the same. Why are all these people coming in and ruining it?" or so on and so forth. But we tried to encourage our people to embrace just this opportunity that God was giving us. All of these new people were at times rural churches, it's challenging to grow. Like it's really, really challenging, you know? And so we actually had this incredible opportunity that we said, "Hey guys, let's open embrace this because God is giving us an opportunity to see people's lives touched and changed. People are coming from all over the United States. And they're coming right to our front door, you know." And so we were able to try and really embrace that and encourage our people. One of the probably the most encouraging statements that one of the ladies, longtime ladies from our congregation, said to me as a pastor was, she said, "Pastor Sheldon, thank you for helping us love the people that were coming in. You taught us how to love them well, and we're thankful for that." And so, because other institutions, other churches, other places in town that had wanted nothing to do with this transient migration of people that were coming in.
One thing, a couple things that stood out to me that I really think are kind of these take-home lessons is number one, it sounds like it took, for lack of a better term, kind of this all-consuming leadership muscle that you had to kind of bring to the situation. Not to say God wasn't at work and whatever, but I'm willing to bet that, we're talking multiple sermons, multiple one-on-ones, just kind of this constant energy of yours to say, hey, we will be this culture of change and we will lead from the front. I mean, that had to be a pretty exhausting process.
Yeah, absolutely. I there were many times where we were just like, "Man, how do we manage this growth?" One of the funniest things is people go, "Boy, that's a really great problem to have." And I would always respond with this statement. When they would say that, I would always respond. I say, "I've come to realize the difference between good problems and bad problems." I said, "The difference is with good problems, if you ignore them, they're going to simply go away." So in these moments, all we had to do was ignore what was happening at our front door, and it would go somewhere else. It would disappear. And so bad problems tend to just keep knocking on the door,
I was
type.
going to say bad problems will live with you for decades,
And so
it's
that
just
was like, but that's where the thing is like we had to face this with really, really strong conviction. That God had positioned us as a church to be here for such a time as this, for this moment. And so we embrace that culture. I don't know if we want to talk about the parade. I mentioned something about the
Oh,
parade.
we'll
Is
get there
now
for
the time
sure,
yet? We'll
for
get there.
sure. We'll get
Okay.
there. But I will say, like, I just think I'm reflecting deeply. I'm like, man, I just don't, if there are other pastors listening who say, man, we're on the cusp of this kind of movement or the cusp of this kind of moment, I just don't want it to be understated how much effort you do put in as a leader. It's almost like a spiritual building program in a lot of ways where you're going, man, we're gonna have to reorganize every system. We're working a little extra, we're just pushing, but I think the rewards, as we will get into, and kind of the love that you're able to show and the discipleship that's able to happen, are definitely worth it. The second thing I liked about your response, I wasn't excited about it, to be clear, but when you talk about the kind of the unfavorable response that you saw from other churches, obviously that kind of serves as a warning sign in the road to say, like, hey, we joke about, oh, that's just how such and such is, or yeah, we've always done things this way, but what you're telling me is that, like, those mentalities that we chuckle at in our boardrooms became life or death in, like, how we reached for the kingdom of God. Like, it became the difference between a church that rose to the occasion, that saw multiplied impact, that saw the gospel go forth, and a church that probably got left in the dust with those same 40 individuals,
Absolutely. I think that there were some key moments where, man, I can almost take you to those moments in my mind right now. I remember there was a series that I did entitled "What Got Us Here Won't Get Us There." How we just recognized that what had got us to this point was insufficient, that there were massive changes that had to take place in order for us to steward well the harvest that God was pouring out. And we just recognized that not everyone was going to like it and not everyone was going to go with us. Like, that was really
That's
hard
tough.
because people that I dearly
Oof.
loved, friends of ours, that I just remember even one family just said, "This isn't the same church that we grew up in,
That's
and
so tough.
we don't really like it. We don't like not knowing people. We don't like not knowing, or growing up with knowing everyone in the church. We're really struggling to embrace this." And so there were times where there were people that chose to go to a smaller church or go to a church that maybe was a little more comfortable for them. And I'm not throwing rocks at those people or anything.
No. Again, I was
I
just
just
thinking that
think,
too, where I'm like, it's not like so much a negative. It's just this reality of like, well, yeah, if a church grows to a certain size or grows to a certain or is trying to reach a certain group, there's always people who say, gosh, bless the mission, but I just don't see my place anymore. And that's hard, you know?
it's tough. It's tough. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about you mentioned it, and I it really does. This next question is really all about like, because let's be honest, the toughest thing about, and I've had this conversation probably at, dozens of times, where you kind of have the same reality, whether it's an oil boom, which obviously is the biggest example often of like a transient population. I mean, you talk about oil workers rolling in, you're
Sure.
talking thousands of people rolling in and out of these places, sometimes for months or years or even weeks. Like it's just crazy. And especially for rural towns, when you're so used to stability, like, yeah, these are the same five families that have kind of held the community down and all those things. But I would say that even in relatively stable, like non-industry driven small towns, you still, no matter what, are having these like in and out people. I've heard multiple pastors say, oh yeah, our church didn't really grow, but that's because five families moved and five families moved in. You know what I'm saying? You're still having this kind of borrowed time element. But I really loved, you talked about this metaphor, the parade, and kind of how you use that as a framework for your congregation to know how to love a transient population. And what I think would be beneficial for our leaders is to just hear you expound on that. Like, talk about what it means to love those who you know are not going to be there a long time. And then from there, we'll move to like the fruit of what that can do. And all that'll be exciting later. But for now, let's talk about just like, yeah, how do we get that mindset?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we recognize, Wofford City has been through some oil booms. Like, so we had people in our congregation that recognized what it looks like for a boom and what it looks like for a bust. And I
Yeah,
remember talking to
because
one
oil
person.
busts are not fun,
Yeah,
man. Like they
they
are the
just
worst.
said that, at one point, I think it was in the 80s, they said, "We stopped doing like farewell parties for people because we were having one every Sunday night and it was so depressing."
That's
That
crazy.
these people that were leaving, and so they said, "We just stopped having them." And so there was these warning signs to me saying, "Hey, yes, we're seeing this incredible influx, but it could be gone in an instant." And as I talked with a pastor, an older pastor, he just said, "Sheldon, we recognize that God has given us a window of opportunity." And I was like, "Man, how can we convey that this is a window of time? It's not something that's indefinite." Because in rural ministry, oftentimes we're so used to somebody that when they join our congregation, we're probably going to see them become baptized. They're going to get married in the church. They're going to
Their
get,
kids, their
have their
grandkids.
kids. They're all going to go through Sunday school. We're going to watch them graduate, all those type of things. And so we're so used to that type of ministry that it was really difficult to get our mind around. And so I just really feel like the Holy Spirit kind of really helped me to give a beautiful word picture to our congregation. And we're as rural people, we understand what parades are like when we have homecoming
Heck
parades.
yeah. Little
All of
Main
you got
Street
a
parade.
parade.
That's the
Yeah, Main
best. You
Street.
grab a
Everybody
lawn
lines
chair.
Main
It's
Street. You
so
got your
good.
lawn chairs there,
You're
and the
still allowed to
parade
throw
come.
candy. Some people don't do that
Yeah,
anymore. It's like, no, this is good. You
absolutely.
know, your
No
uncle's over
candy.
there on the fire truck. Like, it's just how it goes.
For real. And so, like, we just kind of got this word picture for our people, an illustration of just saying, "Hey guys, here's the thing. God has actually opened an opportunity for us to minister to literally thousands of people if we're willing." And it's much like a parade that when you first see a parade, you can see it coming, and we could see this coming. Our
Yeah.
grocery stores, our gas stations,
Yeah.
everything, our slow Main Street began bustling again. There were all kinds of things that were happening. Food trucks were showing up in parking lots and all kinds of stuff like that. We could see the parade coming, and I said, guys, much like a parade, when you're in your lawn chair there and it's coming by, you're interacting with the parade float that is in front of you, and as it's passing by, you engage with that, and then you wave, and then you look down the street for the next one that was coming. And I said, guys, here's the thing, that God has given us the opportunity to minister to people, and each group of people that comes by, each family, each single guy that walks in our doors, we have this incredible moment. We don't know how long it is. We don't know if it's 7 days, 7 months, or 7 years, but we have no idea what how long we have them. But then all of a sudden they're going to be gone, and the next one comes, and the next one comes. But I do recognize this, and I think this was the clincher when it came to the parade, was I said, guys, one day we're going to wake up and we're going to engage one last float in front of us. We're going to minister to those people, and we're going to look down the street, and we're not going to see anything because the parade is done. And that created this powerful urgency in our congregation to recognize that we don't know if God's going to give this to us for 2 months or 2 years or whatever it is, but we have to lean in when we have the moment to each person that comes through our doors, because we have no idea when the parade's going to end. And it was a powerful picture. I think it just really did give us a realization that our time was limited on this opportunity, and we really needed to lean in while we had the opportunity.
And I'm just thinking about how much that sense of urgency was probably so needed, mostly because it's just not the way that our normal small towns function most times. You know, like when you think about it, if I am around the same 1,200 to 2,000 people, odds are there's not that much transfer in and out, and you will have decades to slowly. And I don't want to use the word like court, you know, like you're trying to get them to come to your church. Obviously, we're just trying to preach the gospel, but you will have these like long, long, long on ramps. You know, you'll have moments of serving them and serving alongside them and interacting dozens and dozens and dozens. And you're trying to teach a rural church, hey, that usually works, but this is the exact opposite, where like we don't know if we will get one touch point, five touch points, years, months, weeks, days. And it's like, okay, well then urgency is the name of the game. And so I just really, I love that the Holy Spirit kind of put that framework in your mind. I love that your congregation stepped up to it. And it kind of leads me to my next thought, which is really kind of the completion of this piece of the journey. But like, tell me, because again, what I think we worry about, and I think I'm just maybe coming from my own bias, but like, obviously, especially in a small town, but really in any church setting, a pastor wants to do things to completion. You know what I'm saying? We want to see a teenager or a kid get saved. We want them to get baptized, grow up, maybe send them off somewhere, have them come home, get married, raise their family. We want to dedicate their kids. We want to like get to see the whole story. And obviously, when you're ministering to people for weeks, months, you know, days, maybe a couple of years, you're never going to see the full story of discipleship. And so, in lieu of that, if we're not going to get that level of satisfaction, then what's the fruit? What's the best way to disciple these transient populations? What are the mindsets that guided you or the practical things that you used to say, hey, we're doing good work here? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the win? You know? And so, just talk us through a little bit of that fruit side of it.
I think our main focus was really presenting the gospel as often and in the greatest ways that we possibly can. And we literally saw, I get nervous sharing numbers and weird things like that, but we're certain that we saw over 1,000 people come to know Jesus over the course of whatever amount of years it was. But I recognize that that may seem almost fictitious, but it was like
Sure.
we had such an incredible influx
Yeah.
of
Well, and
people.
honestly,
It was
like if
amazing, man.
it does kind of sound fictitious, but also if you know anything about the Bakken oil boom, it's like, well, no, that's exactly what happened. I mean, towns went from, there's towns
Absolutely.
bigger than Watford City that went to, you know, triple in size, that went from 10,000 to 30,000. I mean, it's just crazy what it did to the landscape of North Dakota.
And so really we were seeing people come to know Jesus in tough, challenging situations, people whose families were really in shambles, whatever it was. We were constantly dealing with people who were in broken situations, and man, dealing with addiction, all types of things that we were seeing. But we were seeing incredible, powerful moments with Jesus. And I think the word discipleship is so challenging because oftentimes we think about discipleship as being this incredibly long linear thing. And we were sitting here going, what does that look like when you recognize you have no idea how long this person is going to be with
It's
you?
true.
And so, man, we did some pre we leaned into relational equity and how important that is, and really tried to connect with people. People opened their homes. People shared meals together, loved one another. We had some crazy, like Wednesday night classes where you had no idea backgrounds of people that were coming in. And man, we had some wild, type things that were happening. But here's the thing, like the bottom line was we recognized that God, in the window that He'd given us, much like the parade, we wanted someone to come to know Jesus, get saved, hopefully baptized in water. And at that point, we say, you know what? If God would send them back home, our hope was that they would engage a local church wherever they ended up landing. And so that to us was discipleship, was saying, okay, we need them to have this positive experience, both with Jesus and the local church, that they would engage in both of those if they were to ever leave. And so that was such a powerful thing because we half the time we didn't know. Like, thank God for social media because we would have these people that we could connect with in weird sorts of ways, which is amazing. But I just remember getting an old-fashioned letter in the mail from a lady. And it's so cool, Joe. I just remembered this. We didn't even talk about any of this prior, but this lady wrote a letter. She said, Pastor Sheldon, we just wanted to thank you guys and WCAG for impacting our life in such a powerful way. She said, we were part of the parade. She even used the words.
Oh,
She said,
wow. So, like,
we
she has
were part,
internalized
yeah,
the vision. Like, we
we
came
were
through
involved.
and left.
Yeah. We were part of the parade. She said, we spent like 16 months in Watford City. She said, our family gave their lives to Jesus Christ. We're now in a life-giving church where we're back where we live now. And we're being discipled and we're growing in Jesus. And we just wanted to thank you for what you did in our lives. And so I just sit there and go, you know, that was one letter that we got. But when you think about it, you know, how many letters didn't get sent? How many people look back at that time going, man, my life was really impacted in those moments in Watford City. And so sometimes we recognize that God's the ultimate one that gives the increase, some plant and some water, you know,
I was
and that's
just thinking of
all
that
we can
verse.
do, you know? Yeah. That's all
Well,
that
I
we
was
can do.
thinking about it from the terms of like, I think it's hard because I remember again being in rural ministry, you kind of anticipated that even if one waters and one or one plants, one waters and God gives the increase, you still kind of expected to have eyes on the whole process most times. You know what I'm saying? Because you were like, if someone's got a wayward grandson, we're going to hopefully win him back to the Lord and figure that out, and like get to see the whole process. But what you're talking about, it truly kind of makes us flex our faith muscles to say, God, is the essence of discipleship that I did as well as I could with the time I had with the people you put in front of me. You know what I'm saying? And like that just kind of calls us back to this trust in God, to the power of prayer. But yeah, what a powerful testimony of how a church can kind of serve even when the results are kind of sight unseen. You know what I'm saying?
Man, it reminds you a lot of the book of Acts, right?
It
Paul rolls
does.
in, people come to know Jesus, and he goes, hey, I gotta leave now. Good luck. You
Yeah,
know,
you think
we're
about it.
trusting
Paul's just
God.
like, peace out. And granted, if you've ever read Corinthians, you could critique Paul and be like, bro, you left that church and stuff happened. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, yeah, no, that's good stuff. Well, obviously, yeah, kind of in the wake of this kind of parade of people, Watford City has grown. The church is doing better in terms of not even doing better. Sorry, it was doing great before, but it's experienced this rapid growth. And then you guys get to a point of planting churches. And so, two things I really want to hit on kind of as we walk through the end of this episode. First, and I just because vision is so like vision, hope, optimism for the future is so hard to come by sometimes. But why do you think small towns are the best place to plant a church right now? And then we're going to get into this conversation of obviously you guys went from We Are Watford City Church to We Will Plant Churches. And so maybe just, you can take it any angle you want. Is it prayer? Is it the practical steps? Is it how to prep the hearts of the people? But there's people out there that I just want them to know that they can plant a church. But first, we're going to start with that vision piece. Why do you, Sheldon McGorman, think that it's a great time to plant in small town?
Man, I really do. I really think that this is actually prime time like we've never seen before. There's some significant things that have changed in the landscape of church that have opened the door in rural communities to the gospel. Like one of the things that when we think about planting in rural places, one of the things I remember the Assemblies of God was just encouraging us, we need a healthy church in every community. And if we look at that from the standpoint of saying, hey, that even means some of these smaller communities where mainline denominational churches have dried up, many of them have closed. Some of these people, there are actually people who are being displaced going, we planted a church in a small rural community in Belfield, North Dakota, and there were a couple people that said, we need to come to your church because ours closed 2 years ago and I haven't been to church since. You know, so we're sitting here, we're gaining people by simply they had no place to go and they know they need to be in church on a Sunday morning. You know, but also I think there's something that has shifted in culture that's powerful. And I remember man, I remember growing up in the church, there was a great fear of what it was going to look like when we got to a place of a post-Christian culture. You know, we were like really afraid. We were saying, man, if we lose all of this, there's going to be such a void. We don't know
It's
what's
kind
going
of
to
the
happen.
boogeyman for a while. And I'm not saying the
Oh,
threat has gone away,
absolutely.
but it really did feel like that. You know, it was like, oh no,
But
you
I
know?
think that really, when we think about it, in these rural places, now we're seeing that there are generations who have quit going to church, and their grandparents maybe went to church, but their parents were very Christmas, Easter, maybe. And then there's finally this next generation that is actually now having kids that they don't say prayers before they go to bed. They rarely even pray before meals. They really have no concept of church. They were never taught. They never went to Sunday school. They probably didn't even go to vacation Bible school, things like that. And you sit there and you go, man, these people have this gaping hole in their heart for the gospel, and they really have never heard it before. So they're not even inoculated in any fashion, in any way,
They're not
and they're
resistant
ready
per
to
se.
hear. They're not even ready, or they're ready or prepared to hear the gospel, maybe even for the first time. And so I think sometimes as a church plants in these type of places, there are people that are waiting and ready to try something new, you know? And so we have no idea when new people are moving into communities, rural communities, maybe they've been there a long time, and there all of a sudden isn't this resistance. Well, I'm a certain denomination, or I'm this, or I'm that. They're actually saying, well, sure, I'll come to your church. I'll give it a shot. You know, I don't go to church, but hey, why not? So I think that there's this incredible opportunity right now, especially in rural communities, that God is opening a door, and it's only getting greater from where we see, you know?
I don't disagree. I also tend to have I use the word optimistic a lot, and what I really mean is like a deep-seated hope. You know, it's not just this flighty, fleeting thing where I'm like, well, in a happy-go-lucky world, I'm like, no. There is just so much opportunity, and it is hard. Like there are real hurdles, and we'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure. But this idea that there's these flyover places where it's like, no, there are opportunities abounding. And truth be told, like it's like you said, there are churches who are just like, yeah. Even in our small town, we had a town of 1,200, that I was youth pastoring in. And one time, after I had a good enough relationship with all these pastors, I said, "Hey, what are you running on a Sunday morning? I'm not asking for any competitive purposes. I just want to know." And came to find out, we still collectively, at our best Sundays, we're only reaching about a quarter of our community, and only about, if our county was double that, then really even like an eighth of our county. And you just kind of looked at and go, "Hey, it's not lack of opportunity." You know what I'm saying? It's just maybe a willingness to jump in. And so Well, let's turn to the practical, and then as we close here, we're going to maybe ask you a few questions about, some personal things that have sustained you on the journey. Talk practical. If someone's trying to plant a church, take it any angle you want, but again, I want to fight this misconception of well, I'm a small town church myself. How do I even consider planting in another community? Or, maybe we are in a bigger community now, and how do we look at rural through that lens? And so what are some of the practical ways you went from being a church to being a church planting church,
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was really something that God began nudging my heart to just say, hey, let's start looking at these opportunities. I remember I had a superintendent, Superintendent Freitag. He's with Jesus now, but he used to say, down every gravel road, there's someone that needs to know Jesus. And I think these rural places that seem far, that seem distanced from other large communities, we recognize that there's still lost people there that need Jesus. And I keep telling all of our rural churches, even as now a superintendent, that one lighthouse is not more important or more valuable than another. That there are places that every single person needs to know Jesus. And so I think as one of the things that I remember hearing, I think it was Henry Blackaby said, you need to watch what God is doing and join him. And sometimes we can be going through rural communities, driving through, recognizing that there's no life-giving church in this community. And we go, God begins tugging on our heart. Maybe we just say, or maybe we have somebody that shows up at our church from another community down the road, or these things where God begins opening these doors. And I've seen it time and time again. When pastors are willing to open their eyes to these opportunities, God starts saying, there's somebody who's ready to do something about it. And so we've just really seen people begin to dream again. We recognize that the Great Commission is still valid. We don't need to we don't need to pray about spreading the gospel,
Yeah, it's true.
type of
It's not
things
like,
like
yeah,
this.
it's not like we're having prayer meetings of like, what should we do? It's like, well, last I checked, still the same words 2,000 years later.
So there's people that need Jesus in these communities. And so I just really feel like, and I recognize that that's not like super practical, but as you begin to pray, you begin to say, hey, Lord, give us direction, give us clarity. Are there opportunities around us that we're missing? I think about when Jesus said to his disciples, he said, lift up your eyes and look to the fields because they're white under harvest. Obviously, there was something they were focused on in one place, but Jesus saying, hey, lift up your eyes. Let's lift up our eyes from even our rural community and say, is there somebody 10 miles away, 15 miles away, 30 miles away that needs Jesus? And we could start a Bible study, or we could host a dinner some night, or we could do something where we could connect with some people there, and God might do something, natural and powerful.
And I want to ask you kind of an off-the-cuff follow-up question to that, but how do you know that your congregation is ready to plant another church?
Oh man.
Like that's I know it's an intentionally kind of provocative question there, where I'm just like, is there an answer to that? What does that look like? Are there non-negotiables? I'd be interested to hear your impromptu response to that.
I'm not 100% sure if you want to hear it, but hey, it's kind of like having kids. You're never ready. Like that's just kind of the way it is in the aspect of if you're waiting for these metrics to say, hey, to do this, we need to do that, we need to have this. I think one of the greatest ways of recognizing is that God actually can begin raising up people within your congregation that you could say, you know what, it would be really nice to keep this person. They're really great at this. They're really great at teaching. They're really great at preaching. They're really great at worship. They're really great at whatever. And oftentimes, especially in rural settings, we go, man, we definitely want to keep these people. But I think that God is actually asking us, are we willing to sow our best into the kingdom and see other things, multiply that way? And man, we just kind of coined this phrase. It's almost a joke where we go, we need to start sending our best and train the rest. Like that's just
Yeah,
what we need to do
seriously.
when it comes to this multiplication factor. And so I think that's God can start raising up people. That can be a sign where you're kind of like, hey, we've got some depth in our congregation of people that could do these type of things. And God can start tugging on people's hearts. You know, one of the things, Joe, I think that's really, really important as pastors is that we have forgotten to preach about the call.
Oh man, we could go for hours on this. This is
Yeah,
definitely a piece of
we
my
may have to do
conversation.
a part two
Oh,
or something here,
but I'm with you.
but.
Like and it wasn't even we both work in what we call, this district or network level leadership where you're kind of seeing all these churches, not just one or two, but like I don't disagree. I still feel like one of the craziest things that's happened is like it is less common to have these kind of like, I mean, I cannot remember a church service where I heard a pastor say, there's someone in here called to be a pastor, called to plant a church, called to be a missionary. And it's not that, I'm sure it's being said somewhere, but I think it has maybe taken less prominence. And I don't disagree with you. If we can recapture that in some way, I believe that we'll see kind of this hidden potential,
I can't remember who said it, but they said, man, I'm finding that churches that preach about salvation get people saved, that they preach about people being healed, get people healed, that preach about people being baptized in the Holy Spirit, people get baptized in the Holy Spirit. And then if they preach about people being called, they find their church filled with called people. And so we just
Oh,
go, man,
that's so
what are we
good.
doing? We gotta just once again say, you know
Done.
what? You might be in a season of life right now that God is saying, hey, you're getting to be 50 years old, and there's a shift happening in your life. And you just go, man, I'm going to shift my life from a successful life to a life of significance in this
Oh
moment. I'm going
man,
to give
preach it,
the.
brother. That's what I'm
Come on, we
saying.
can get going,
Gosh.
And
No, that's good.
I just think, yeah, God is just raising up the next generation, and they may not look like they once did, where we're sending people to Bible college. And maybe like we're saying, hey, we're training people, we're raising up people that are ultimately going to plant in the town right next to us and see people's lives touched and changed for eternity, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to circle back, kind of at the end of this, we'll talk a little bit about kind of you as the personal pastor. There was just two things that stood out to me in our conversation on the phone. Because again, I want people to be in this job for the long haul, especially in a rural setting. Like longevity often is king. Longevity just helps you unlock so many doors in your community. But you mentioned when we talked on the phone these two kind of pieces of it that I just want you to take a second and get real practical about. One is you mentioned this idea of like truly taking a day off, and again, there's all sorts of there's all sorts of reasons to talk about Sabbath and whatever, but I just know that you seem to say it with such ease where you're like, yeah, of course we should be doing this. Of course I've tried to guard this. And again, I don't think all of us see that same luxury, that same necessity, or the same like so I would love to hear what that's done for you as a minister and as a person. And then also you mentioned this whole idea of like a preaching schedule. And again, a lot of our listeners are Pentecostal people, and so the idea that we're planning things out ahead of time and that we're doing these kind of things or structure, like it can feel either foreign or it can just straight up feel unnecessary. You know what I'm saying? And so just give us maybe your best couple minutes on each of those, saying, hey, what has this done for you in terms of church growth, church longevity, that your personal longevity, that kind of thing?
You know, as far as days off, you know, I just found I had six kids, and so I recognized that a ministry could be pretty demanding, regardless of whether you have, say, a large necessarily church or you're in a rural context, maybe a smaller context that way. Regardless of where you find yourself, that there's always ministry demands and they always are coming. And I just came to the realization that I was like, man, I really need more so. It was out of the necessity of a family day where I could just kind of disconnect, spend some time with my big family, and just spend time with my kids. And really, another thing too is it was just rejuvenating to my soul, and that was really important in those moments. And so I had a pretty strict day off where I would turn my church phone off, and I would leave a message that said, "Hey, you know, it's my family day today. I'm going to get back to you as soon as I can." I do check my messages from time to time, just to make sure. And so, you know, I in 20 years of ministry, I can maybe count on one hand two times that there was like an emergency that I had to like respond to in that time frame. And there were things that happened on days off that ended up, I had to go into the church or a funeral or different things like that, meet with a family. But for the most part, both my congregation, our staff, when it got to that point, and people just started to understand, that was superintendent, or not superintendents, but Sheldon's day off pastoring when I was pastoring, and just kind of say, that was just a life-giving necessity for my ministry. And so it was just really something, especially in those booming times when it was very exhausting, to be able to have all I needed. I found, and Joe, other people need different things, but I just found if I could get 24 hours off the clock, man, I've just felt like $1 million the next week ready to go in, And so that was super life-giving for me, and being able to just kind of disconnect and love my family and just feel like I didn't have a lot of extra weight during that time frame really helped me a lot. So yeah.
Good. Before we move on to this kind of conversation and preaching schedule, I do want to put it in these terms for our listeners, but like you're telling me that, three campuses got planted, the church grew, you were able to navigate through all this stuff and become superintendent, and you took a day off. That's crazy.
And I took a day
You
off.
know,
Yeah.
and I just, because I think, and maybe actually, let's not even throw the listeners under the bus. This is probably for me. You know what I'm saying? To be like, okay, like God moves and he moves in spite of us, and he moves like we can take these very normal boundary driven lives, and like obviously ministry is ministry, but it's like no, we can do these things and still see God do incredible things. But hey, as we wrap up, let's talk preaching schedule. Just give us again a blip blurb. What does that mean to you? Why is it important? How can we utilize it?
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, I think the most stressful thing about pastoring, and I might be overestimating this, but one of the most stressful thing about pastoring was getting to a Monday or Tuesday and go, what am I going to preach this week?
Oh,
Or even
let me
get to
check
a
with
Saturday or something.
let me check with my statistician that I just made up. Yeah, they would confirm that is actually a lot of people's experience. So
So I just found that if I could get it kind of ahead of the game, and I'm Joe, I'm gonna let you in on the secret here, man. This is gold.
okay, I'm
I
pumped.
want you to, there is this thought process, especially in Pentecostalism. And I grew up Pentecostal my whole life. 2 weeks in, I was laying on a pew as a baby as a Pentecostal. Okay.
If you say the word liturgy, I'm taking your card. So I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
No, we're sitting here going, no, we have this weird thought process that the Holy Spirit can only speak to us in the moment.
Ah, yeah, say it again. It's just great, you know?
And you know what? I had a buddy of mine who was like, I just love those pastors that get up there with their Bible and then the Holy Spirit speaks to them and they just preach, And I just told my friend, I said, you know what? I said, I feel the exact same way. I just asked the Holy Spirit to speak to me on Tuesday instead of on Sunday.
A lot less pressure that way, turns out. A lot less stressful. Gosh.
Thing though, I just really felt like God began speaking to my heart, and I just started writing down things that I felt like God was speaking to me in prayer. Maybe I was at a network conference that God started speaking to my heart. I was at watching something, YouTube videos, and there were things that God began. And I just started writing them down in the back of my journal or whatever it was, my calendar. I just started writing these things down. And I got to the point where I just said, you know what? If God began speaking to my heart and stirring in these things, maybe these were things that he wanted me to convey to our church moving into the next season. So I started planning out some of the series that we were going to do. We would say, you know what? I'm gonna maybe have something around Easter around this. And I got to the point where actually we started scheduling out much of these things, Jesus moments for me, almost a year in advance. So we'd get into January, I'd lay out a whole preaching calendar through Easter. Then often in the summers, we would take a book of the Bible and preach verse by verse through books of the Bible in the summer times. And so some people, in our church, they love that. That was deep dive discipleship. You can't dodge tough issues. You
Yeah,
gotta
that's true.
like, oh man, this is uncomfortable at times. But then, we would try and get out quite a ways, and it just gave us a lot more time to be very creative in what we did, and gave us a lot more time that God could speak more clarity to these things to us. And so we would do things cyclically, like there were always certain months that we do our core values at the church. So then all of a sudden, hey, we're going to spend January talking about core values. There were certain things that would fall, obviously, every Easter, every Christmas. They always come up, you know? And so every summer. And so it got to the point where when you've been at a church for 25 years, leading 17, you could get into these cyclical moments that you felt really, it relieved a lot of the stress of Sunday to Sunday, because we didn't know where we were going. In fact, we felt like God began giving us this beautiful map that we could follow along, and it was helpful to relieve that continuous stress of we don't know where we're navigating, we don't know where we're going. And obviously, it was flexible. If we felt like God said, "Hey, we
Oh,
need to go
yeah.
different in the fall," we absolutely did that. But it was
Yeah.
things that said, you know. Finding that rhythm in the calendar. And that was something that our staff enjoyed. When I would share that with our staff, they loved where we were going. They started telling people about things that they were talking about. And man, just wait for, you know, this certain month, we're going to be deep diving into this. And so there was some excitement that was built with that as well. But really, it had a lot to do with relieving that day-to-day
Yeah.
stress, saying, where are we going? What are we talking about? And it's almost this fear or this trepidation that we have moving forward that I don't know at what point God is going to stop speaking to me, you know, type thing
Yeah.
or something. And so there's
Yeah.
this weight that we carry in some way.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And again, I often think back to, when something happens once, you go, man, that's cool, but when it happens twice or three times, and I can think back to other voices in different ways on this podcast who have said, hey, sometimes that's the point of burnout where we say, man, I just have nothing to give on a Sunday. And it's like, well, spend time with the Holy Spirit and let him speak a map to you. It doesn't just have to be this moment. And then it relieves pressure and allows you time to just keep praying, to say, God, I'm going to pray for the sake of praying. I'm going to prep for the sake of prepping, not because I'm desperate and not because I've had a tough week, but anyways, Pastor Sheldon, thank you so much. This has been an incredible conversation. I've really enjoyed all the twists and turns of it, and just I felt like we've covered a lot of good ground. So thank you for being on the podcast today.
Joe, I'm so thankful. Thank you so much for allowing me just to speak into people's lives and just to be a part of this. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to say again, we hope that you leave this conversation equipped and empowered and inspired. We really do hope that you sense the understanding that we are also rural practitioners. We are people who understand the pressures you face, and we want you to walk out of here just excited about what God's doing in these small, out-of-the-way places. As always, you can find us through more formal channels, ruraladvancement.com, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Or true to rural fashion, you can always just find another rural leader and say, hey, there's some conversations I really want you to hear and be a part of. For this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Sheldon McGorman, and we will see you next time.